Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hello, America, and all you good people around the world. This is Jack July. Welcome to the Daria and Giovanni Show. Daria's not with us today, but I want to thank her very much for allowing me to pilot the Starship Freedom. Hopefully I'll try to keep it out of the asteroid belt and return it to her in the condition in which she left it. We're going to have a good show today. I think everybody's going to have a lot of fun. Today we're going to discuss the spy thriller genre, but not in the way most people discuss it. I think we're going to use current events, and, well, you'll see, it's a lot of fun. I have three guests. Let me introduce them. The first, Lilia Fabri, author of Ordinance 93. She describes it as a new law prevents pregnancies without permission and follows the first four people to break it. I've read this book. It's a wonderful book. I highly suggest reading it. She also writes for the American Journal. And we can find out more about her at lfabry.com. That's lfabry.com. Lilia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, all right. And we also have Dr. Stephen Martino. Went to school at the University of Pennsylvania, and as a neurologist, he currently resides in New Jersey. If he's not working, he can be found with his five children. Soccer fields, Cub Scouts, dance recitals, sounds like my life, only I only have two of them, doctor. I don't know how you do it with five. The New Reality is his first novel, and we can visit his website at martinoauthor, one word, .com. Welcome, Dr. Steve.
Hey, well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're glad to have you. And last but not least, my friend and my host on the Robert Bertrand Show, where I co-host, Robert Bertrand. Welcome, my friend.
Well, technically it's called Dead Wrong Radio, but since I don't have anything to plug, I'm going to plug a great book called Amy Lynn.
I've heard of that book.
If any of you guys are interested in reading kind of just one of these great Southern stories with also a lot of unexpected action and just well-thought-out story and plot, then I go on Amazon right now and check out Amy Lynn by author Jack July.
Well, thank you so much, Robert. That's very kind. All right, let's discuss some spy thriller genre. Now, what is the spy thriller genre? That's the first thing we need to define, okay? We're talking about books by Vince Flynn, Brad Taylor, Brad Thor, Tom Clancy, Frederick Forsyth, and other thrillers involving technology, spies, assassins, geopolitics, international or domestic settings, and terrorists, both foreign and domestic. Now, what I've done is I've put together a list of questions talking about the spy thriller genre, but you know what? If we look outside our front doors, America's pretty much become a spy thriller novel. So I think we're going to write our own. I'm going to start with the first question. Now, the first question is kind of basic because I love Tom Clancy, and then I started reading Vince Flynn, and tragically they both passed away. God rest them both. I need another book to read. I need another series to get interested in. Now, Dr. Steve, what would you recommend for me?
Well, the best thrillers, I mean, this goes beyond, there's some spy things in it, is by James Rollins. James Rollins, by far, it's about 9-10 books, and each book is well-researched. It has spy, has political things, it has history, and it is a thriller series that no matter where you pick it up in the series, you're going to love it.
Outstanding. Do you know the name of the first book in the series?
I've read about 11 of them. I think Amazonia was one of the first ones in the series, and
okay.
It's one of my favorite ones. That's why it stands out. It was one of the first ones I read. It's actually a real thriller through the Amazon, and it's not only a history lesson, but it's a page-by-page finger-turner, so it's a type of book that you can't sit and put down. It kept me up all night reading it. So,
awesome.
And just like most
of
the other novels. Are.
Awesome. Lilia, what do you recommend for me?
Oh, dear. Like, when I heard it was a spy thriller episode, I was like, oh, my God, I'm a woman. I can't really... There are women who write spy novels and women who read them, but it wouldn't be my genre of first choice. But there actually are some good ones that do engage. The last two books I read by Brad Meltzer, he's more of a sort of, he takes like an element of history,
uh-huh.
and he'll modernize it, and he'll set like his spy novels or thriller novels in that genre. So, for example, the last one I read was about the origins of Superman, of the creator of Superman, whose name escapes me. His father was killed by a gun, and the kid was so depressed about it that he invented this bulletproof man. And, of course, the story revolves around the mystery surrounding this gun, and was it a regular gun or was it a historical gun that was meant to cause all these events to go into action? It's actually really good.
Well, that does sound good. Now, how do you spell that last name? Is it Meltzer?
Yes.
Oh,
be the one.
Brad Meltzer, outstanding. Robert?
Well, I can tell you the spy series that I would never, ever suggest to anybody, which is the Bourne trilogy. I thought that was probably some of the worst writing I've ever read. I also didn't keep my interest whatsoever. And then they made movies out of it.
Yes, they did. What does that tell you?
Well, here's what it tells me. If I tried to reread the books, I'd have Matt Damon in my head, and I can't do that.
I understand. Matt Damon would be bad in your head.
Bad in his own head.
Bad in his own head. Absolutely. Oh, by the way, guests, if you have a comment, feel free to jump in. That's fine. Just pretend where this is like the Algonquin Circle, you know, kind of like a Dorothy Parker thing. You know, we're free to discuss here. All right. Now, let's look at international politics, national politics as it concerns us today. Now, we have antagonists everywhere we look. We have bad guys all over the place. We are besieged with so many problems in America right now that it's really, we don't have a net big enough to catch them all. But if you were to pick an antagonist, somebody that you were going to put in a novel that is currently operating in America as a politician or some sort of leader, who would that be, Dr. Steve?
Well, there's so many to pick from. Sometimes the best people to pick from have no name. I think the one thing that's really encroaching upon the Middle East is the ISIS. If I were to make a thriller novel, I've just been watching what's going on in Mosul. I've been watching actually also what's been going on in Kenya, and I'm writing a little article about it for my blog. We're seeing these groups that just want to seem like they want to wreck all of humanity. They just want to tear it down. They don't care about borders. They don't care about people. They just want their way of life enforced on anyone. So sometimes, if I were writing another novel, I would incorporate make up someone for that. There's a bunch of politicians here in the United States that come out to my mind, but I don't know what type of audience you have. So if I had to pick one domestic, I pick Nancy Pelosi. But that's a whole different story.
Outstanding. Lilia, who would you pick?
Oh, that was actually a really good one on the serious side. So I guess I'll go more to the ridiculous side and say my very own lovely Congresswoman, Sheila Jackson Lee. She is she's almost certifiable. I think if they ever sat her down and did the actual sanity test, she might not pass. I mean, she's been Congresswoman ever since I was a kid in school, and I've not voted for her every election, and I never get my wish.
No. I'm
Can
so
I interject
sorry,
something here? That a funny anecdote.
Sure.
When you say someone's certifiable, I worked down in Baltimore, and I had the pleasure of taking care of a congressman. And part of my things as I did as a neurologist is to ask them some simple questions, make sure that they're playing with a full deck. The guy was completely demented, active congressman, completely demented. I looked at his wife. I said, he's in Congress? And she said, yeah, the party whip just tells him what to do. Really? She goes, you wouldn't believe how things work in Washington, D.C. That's where she left it, but it's an indelible mark of my mind for about 15 years. So,
Dr. Steve, this little anecdote gave us the thriller in the spy thriller genre, because that's scary stuff that you just said. Robert, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I like the ISA answer. I mean, if you really look at it, there are so many horrific villains in the world right now. ISIS is one, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, the Iranian government, the Chinese government. I mean, you look around and there's no lacking for bad guys, which is kind of strange how Hollywood still kind of just wants everything to be about Nazis. Because there's so many crazy evil people out there, and I think that one group that has not really been touched upon is the Anonymous. You might have heard of them. They're the group of hackers who sometimes go after corrupt politicians. Sometimes they just go after political targets. And in fact, in this last election in 2012, there was a lot of talk about how they were the downfall of the ORCA program. And if you're a big, you know, Republican wonk or really just a political junkie, you'll know that ORCA famously failed to live up to its name, and its it went down like Moby Dick, basically, because we had people on the ground not being able to get the vote out, not getting the messages, not getting the database. The whole thing was just messed up. And it's true that Anonymous played a large or significant role in that act of political sabotage. It shows you that a group of people, not even using violence, can significantly affect the course of American leadership and basically politics.
Outstanding, Robert. I think that is. See, those are all three wonderful things. They're all groups, mostly, except for Nancy Pelosi, who is just a terrifying character.
Sheila
Jackson Lee, yes.
Okay, oh, she's an entity. You can count her as a group. All the people in her head. You go ahead. Group her.
Mine is Ezekiel Emanuel, and I'll tell you why. Because if I was going to imagine an evil character, I want one that spits when he talks. I want one that gets louder and more animated when he lies. I want one that doth protest too much. I want one with a character with so many bizarre attributes that he really does fulfill my antagonist role. So, all right, let's move on. So now we've pretty much got all of our enemies laid out for our novel. I think we got a pretty good set there. How about some protagonists? How about a female protagonist? Now, we talk a lot about women or men, like Lilia was saying. Give me a woman, somebody strong, somebody you'd like to see handle things right now, Dr. Steve.
Well, the reason why I'm going to say Sarah Palin is I would say she has been completely crucified in the news and yet always puts her head up, runs her family, and always comes out very professional. And despite what you throw at her, not even depending on what you believe in, her integrity as a Christian person, her integrity as a mom, and her integrity for the love of the country, despite your party, even the most ardent people who dislike her say you can't argue with that. We can argue with her politics. And I have good friends who are both left and right wingers. I'm very good friends with good people. We go to church together. We talk some politics, but you know, she just reminds me of, you know, sort of like almost like my wife in a way. She's just a good person, no matter what she believes in. So I pick her.
Outstanding. Lilia, Who do you think?
Oh, my. If we're going to real person, I'd say, just for fun, just because she would run it so hilariously, would be Ann Coulter. Just give her the reins for a month or two and see if things just don't turn around instantly.
Do you know
Ann
Coulter?
Ann Coulter. If you're going to do a movie with Ann Coulter, have Martin Lawrence be her wacky sidekick.
Ooh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. You know what I like about Ann Coulter? She is vilified. She is very vilified, but she goes to the tough places and she tries to do the tough things. But she said something in one of her books, and I have read her books, and I know it's ridiculous to read her, whatever, say what you want. I like her. But she stated something one time about single mothers, and all of her books are cited. I mean, she just doesn't pull things out of her long blonde hair. It's all cited. But she said something very powerful. She wrote something very powerful. She said, if you take the children of single mothers out of the prison system, the demographic that's left would match that of the country. And I thought that was such a powerful thing to write. And it is true, and it is turns out to be true. Robert, who's your smart girl?
My super girl is going to have to be the every woman, because one of my favorite heroes, not just female heroes of all time, was Sarah Connor in the Terminator series. And it was basically, if you watched it recently, it's just a waitress who doesn't really have her life together. You know, she's got a roommate and a crappy job. And she's just put into this series of events of no fault of her own. And she handles it marvelously. And then, of course, in the second movie, she turns into this super badass kind of vigilante slash prepper. So I kind of think that you could take any American woman and throw her into this chain of events where she unwittingly gets involved, maybe because of her name, you know, somebody tried to hack her account when they were really meaning to hack somebody else's account, or, you know, basically she's just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I like stories like that, because personally I'm not a big fan of celebrities, and a lot of politicians right now are kind of in that that category. So personally, I just want to see a regular American woman, you know, facing something that's bigger than her and coming through on the other end.
Do you know, we see that in a lot of our Tea Party leaders, and you know, I've seen a lot of them on television, and they're so regular that you can't remember their names. They don't stand out, but there's these Tea Party leaders that I see, not pretty people, just regular old people, moms, you know, they do wonderful things. And I see where you're going with that, because it is the every woman. It's the every person that's going to pull us out of this. They're finally going to say enough, hopefully,
yeah,
and pull us out of this. Although I'm kind of thinking she's going to come from the north, riding a polar bear named Liberty, swinging the sword of justice. And we know who that is, don't we, Dr. Steve? Yes,
yes.
We do. All right, excellent. Okay. Now let's talk about in our novel, in our spy thriller, sometimes people like to interject their personal politics. So what kind of a political situation, what kind of political things are going on now? I'll give you an example. Suddenly, Lois Lerner's emails have been lost. It's amazing. They're gone. Along with the six other people that worked with her. Those have all disappeared, too, in some kind of heinous computer crash. It was a tragedy, really. And what kind of political activities can you see in your novel, things that are functioning today, things that are going on right now, Dr. Steve?
Well, I'll stay with the medical field. Even though yours is completely a fantastic idea, I said to myself, I go, how, it's such a ridiculous story that anyone would believe that they have mysteriously lost these emails. I said, am I the only one listening that this sounds as ridiculous as it seems? Well, I'll stick to the medical. side of things. And what I will talk about is what I see right now going through the immense waste in the Obamacare system. The immense it's amazing, starting with the website to the exchanges to the people, how they're getting on, how the IRS, they're increasing 14,000, at least 14,000 people to handle it, the amount of debt that's going to cause. We can't pay for Medicare. We can't pay for Medicaid, which has gone up at least 5 million people with the new Obamacare exchange, and yet we're going to have this whole new health insurance when we can't pay for our first two that we're handing out to the people of America. So I would have to say some government corruption with that, and cronyism paying off different people, paying off different health care providers, and also paying off different congressmen for different states, because that's sort of what I see right now. And if you follow the money train and where it's all going, you see the people who have their hands out. And just one example, with money was given out, millions of dollars were given out, actually hundreds of millions were given out for just a medical exchange to put up in the state. And ironically, the one person who received the majority of it was in California. And I don't think it takes much of a stretch to find out why that California received the most for their exchange.
Interesting. Thank you, Doctor. That is a very interesting take. I actually went to the doctor today, and I was talking to him, and I asked him about what was going on with medicine, and he was not shy in talking to me about it. He's an older gentleman. I think he's in his mid to late 60s. And I asked him about concierge medicine, you know, what he thought about that. And he said that, 70% of his patients were Medicare, and he really couldn't do that. He said, that's very expensive. You would need a very good patient list. You need a wealthy patient list to pull that off. But that is indeed interesting.
You know what they do in different countries. I work with physicians from Romania, from a lot of the old Eastern Bloc. They basically, that's how socialized medicine works. You have people who pay for their medicine and people who get it through the government. People who pay for it get excellent service. People who do not really don't. These are coming from first-hand accounts for people who worked. You know, you named all the Eastern Bloc and a lot of the socialist, you know, minded countries, and that's what you get. And the concierge is a good idea for certain physicians, but you really have to be in a more affluent area.
Got it. Lilia, what do you think?
Let's see. I'd like to build a little on what the doctor says and just think, imagine how tragic it is in our healthcare system, not just for the average person, but for the poor veterans out there. They go overseas, they survive IEDs, ambushes, bullet attacks. They come over here, they get a little cancer, and the VA just can't be bothered with that, and they end up dying from something that's preventable, treatable, should be easy, in and out, you know, come in and get your medicine, and, you know, our system just totally fails them. It's so tragic that you'd think it did come from a book, but it's actually real life.
Yep. I think we'd save money if we shut the VA down and just hand them all United Healthcare cards. We'd be money ahead.
Yeah. Yes,
Robert,
agreed.
What do you think?
Well, yeah, I want to kind of touch upon the lowest learner a bit before I go to the scenario, which I've kind of forgotten because I was so into what we've been talking about. But not that long ago, there was a famous mass murderer who I will not name because I hate naming a mass murderer, because that's what they want. They want to become famous. But he destroyed his computer. He did everything he could to wipe away the evidence. And a couple of months ago, they came out with a report, and they found pretty much all the files that he was trying to get rid of. So if he physically destroyed his computer and his hard drives, and they were still able to go and get the files and found out some very disgusting and disturbing facts about this this young, I don't want to call him a man, a monster, then you really can't tell me that somebody who's been emailing on a network with, you know, servers and redundancy for making sure that this sort of thing doesn't actually happen, that you can always go back and get your email, then that's insane. Because even if you're in one big office, you should be able to go onto somebody else's computer, log on to your own account, and you should be able to read your old emails, even your archived emails. It's all saved. Nothing ever goes away. And as long as you still have that physical computer, somebody, a forensic computer specialist is going to be able to come in and get those emails right away. So the idea is beyond fiction. But the scenario that you were talking about was basically what is going on right now that we could kind of weave into the plot of a spy thriller. Am I correct on that?
That is correct.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's so much going on. It's kind of hard to figure it out. You can definitely look at the Bergdahl case, where Bo Bergdahl, or Bergdahl, whatever you want to call him, was recently traded for some kind of high-level, Taliban generals, basically. What I would do with that is I would have, put a little tiny chip in each of their brains so that I could track them wherever they went. And then I'd have a drone kind of like hovering over them at all times. And, in a couple of weeks from now, I would very quietly blow up each of those Taliban prisoners. And that way I would get the best of both worlds. I could say, listen, I dealt with terrorists, but then afterwards I dealt with them again. So I can't really complain.
I like that. Now, my thoughts are with the 50,000 children that they've dropped on our border, that's a very good smokescreen for what they call OTMs, other than Mexicans, which make up, according to some reports, I can't quote anybody right now, but 15 to 20% of the people crossing the border. Now, by OTMs, what they're talking about is they're talking about a lot of jihadis. There's some jihadis getting through, just walking right across. And with the proper organized terror attacks on our shopping malls, schools, all the things that the places we feel safe, the places that we congregate, you're looking at a terror worse than 9/11, because it will strike the heartland. It, 9/11 for a lot of people was a TV show. I mean, as horrible as that sounds, they were so removed from New York. They'd never been to New York. They didn't understand the size and scope of what happened. I did. I've been to New York. I understand the tragedy. But to a lot of people, it just still didn't touch them. It wasn't real. I think when you're at your local mall and you're burying your friends and things start going on close to you, I think that's when it hits home. And I think that's the kind of situation that I would use. I think the mass of children they're dumping on our borders is a wonderful screen for some really bad actors to get in our country. So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Can I interject one thing? We're already seeing some of the negative effects of the people coming through that could be just as bad as terrorism. We forget about the biologic diseases that come through with them. And one is, like, I can mention a bunch of them, but TB. TB here to America. And I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen them. I've treated them. And when you find out they have TB, you're like, well, now I'm exposed to TB, and I'm exposing it to my kids. I had a newborn at the time. So that when you see these diseases, they also hit home. I mean, that's not even terror. That's a indirect biologic warfare that can come in almost indirectly. Sorry to interject, but I just wanted to add that story because it's unbelievable.
But by the way, that's actually awesome because, I mean, that's another way you could do it. Like, infect somebody with a horrible disease, sneak them across the unprotected southern border, and, I mean, that's a spy movie in itself. Or
yeah.
The Ebola army. Yeah, very good. Lilia, do you have any comments on this now?
Yeah, I do like the idea of the, yeah, let's give the terrorists back, but, you know, we're giving them back with a little bonus, and you'll be learning what that is very soon. I would definitely read that book.
Outstanding. All right. Now, lately we've gotten a lot of saber rattling from China, Russia, and
Iran.
Iran, North Korea. It seems like everybody's taking their sabers and rattling them at us. And we do nothing. We sit there and just stare at them. Okay, yeah, whatever. Whatever. So, Dr. Steve, who do you think... let me try Lily. I'm going to start with Lily this time. Who do you think is our biggest geopolitical enemy and why?
That's a tough one to say because Iran could and probably will get the bomb and what they do with it, but it's not going to be good. And I guess how soon that happens is really going to make them. And if, you know, if they don't get it soon, then it's always Russia. Russia always scares me just because it's so big. If we ever go to war with them, there's no way to conquer them. You just have to kind of bomb and move. You can't really put boots on the ground there. It's just, it's a scary thing to see our government. You know, we do have a lot of saber rattling, and some of them with serious sabers to rattle, and, you know, this government's policy seems to be, you know, just close your eyes and stick your fingers in your ears, and it's not there.
Very frightening, isn't it? Yeah, the scorched earth policy was a Russian original. They killed a lot of Nazis doing that, so they're pretty bright when it comes to that ground game.
They scorched their own earth, though. That was the problem. I mean, they're like, oh, you're going to come after this city? Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and burn it, like we did right before Napoleon invaded. And when they get there, we conquered Moscow. Oh, but there's nothing there, no food. And they let all the prisoners out. Great. that is a frightening scenario, but... You look at Iran, they were sending their navy closer and closer to American waters. You have Russia sending, you know, bombers closer and closer to American territory. And, of course, North Korea is the same old delusional North Korea. But I think it all comes to the big lie. They all want their people to fear them, and they need to know the people need to know, if they're going to properly fear their government, that they can do stuff and America's not going to come in and save them. So if they really turn increasingly more tyrannical, they're not going to – America, big America, the hero, can't do anything. Because there's still people out there, especially in countries where they have no freedom, that – look to America as a, you know, bright beacon of freedom and liberty and you know, just greatness, and the idea of progress is still alive. As much as we hear about anti-American sentiment throughout the world, most of that is ginned up by anti-American governments. So what I think is happening with these situations is that they're just trying to convince their people that America's not going to be able to stop us. We're going to be able to do whatever we want. And in the case of North Korea, apparently we're still dealing with mass starvation and life sucks and, you know, whatever else their crazy propaganda departments will publish. But, yeah, it's all kind of a reaction to what the people are thinking and what the people in their countries are dealing with. It has less to do with us than using us as a character.
Excellent. Dr.
Yeah.
Steve,
well, I agree with the North Korean. The people over there are, I agree with you, they're starving, and they really think that as Americans we spend all night thinking about how we want to take over North Korea. And that's part of the propaganda that's in their mind. But here's the scary thing about North Korea. I've watched some of their missiles. You know, we've heard some of their missiles have misfired. We've seen some of their longer-range missiles not do what they were supposed to. And we see them launching out into the sea or past Japan. I go, what? And it dawned on me. I go, what if that missile, sort of blew up or went off course, hit Japan, hit a major city, hit something in South Korea, just accidentally, because it could happen. And that would, that's the tinderbox. It's almost like, what was that guy's name, King Ferdinand or Prince Ferdinand back in World War One. You just have one
Ron
minor
Duke,
thing.
The,
we have
the Duke.
The Archduke, yeah. We have China. We have Russia. We have the Middle East, completely a disaster. And we're looking at our Western NATO allies, and I'll be honest with you, there's no spine to NATO. We couldn't, if something happens, I'm not going to name any countries by name, but you can rattle them off, by the dozen almost, that they just don't do anything and rely on us. So the time is prime. So if I had to do a spy novel, I'd have one of North Korean missiles accidentally hit Japan or hit a major populated city in South Korea by accident, and that would start everything.
But it only looks like an accident because you had Russian hackers reprogram the coordinates, and that's so much you could do with that.
Yeah, that was getting good.
Excellent. Now, see, my fear, or my antagonist, insofar as a geopolitical force, is without a doubt China. I would probably work something into the fact that they've killed so many of their girls, their men have no girls. And what's really harder to control than a man without a family? See, because a wife and children mellow a man out, all men. I don't care who you are. If you love your wife and you love your family, you are nothing like you were before you had them. Nothing. And what we have here in China is the one-child policy combined with,
collective abortion.
Yeah, the murder of female babies. And we adopted a lot of them. I mean, we have a lot of – I know two couples with Chinese girls, two, not just one, two, in my neighborhood. So how many are there out there that we've taken out of that country? They have no girls, and men need girls. And you want to see a madman? Don't give him access to girls for a long time. And he's a pretty angry man. And I think we could do something with that. That's what I think. All right. Let's see. What else do we have? If there was a film version currently of the United States, what movie would you apply to what's going on right now? Any film from any time. What would you apply to us right now, Dr. Steve?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. It's almost, I'm going to give an absurd answer because I think what I see around me with the absurdity of losing the emails, I can't pick any real movie that makes sense. So I'm going to pick Willy Wonka, the Chocolate Factory, because those things were so outrageous. And with what we heard with the emails, you know what? That's an Oompa Loompa thing. So I would just pick Willy Wonka because of the ridiculous American politics right now.
You know, Dr. Steve, that was one of them that popped into my mind. Exactly one.
No,
Lilia, what do you
good.
Think?
I thought that was going crazy.
No,
let's
see, that's,
what movie
that's
would
one.
I think A Few Good Men would be appropriate here, where a bunch of stuff is being done undercover and everyone wants to cover it up, and it just takes this one kind of a-hole who just, wants to take the easy way out, being forced to dig in and just bring everything to light. Because I think if we did put people on stand and say, you ordered the Code Red, didn't you, and just irked them enough that they would come out and finally tell the truth and we could finally have some sort of justice or closure.
Very good, very good. Robert?
Okay, I got one of the emails that might work. Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just because, obviously, these emails are in some sort of government vault somewhere, and in Area 51, yeah, right? I can't remember now. With the Iraq crises that we're looking at, I would actually look at War of the Worlds. only we're the aliens, we're the Martians, and the disease, the bacteria that is defeating us is the American populism that kind of allowed us to say, you know what, this is really hard. Let's not do this because this is too hard. We can't teach these people to love democracy. I mean, if you look at the chain of events, we went from we're going to go teach them a lesson. We're going to teach anybody who supports terrorists a lesson. We're going to invade this gigantic country. We're going to scare you. If you have weapons of mass destruction, we're going to teach you that if you have them, we're going to come to your country and we're going to take it over. And then we're trying to replace it with a version of America, which I actually think is awesome, by the way. I think everybody should be more like America. Because I like being able to go out and read and see women without, you know, masks on their face and, you know, stuff like that. But what you've seen instead is, you know, we kind of gave up, and people didn't have a will for it. We couldn't deal with the fact that good American soldiers and Marines and sailors and Air Force airmen were losing their lives in volunteering to lose their lives, in fact. And what we saw was getting away from that initial goal, which is teaching them a lesson, and then saying, "Hey, this is how you do. This is how you do government." Instead, we wrote Islam into the Constitution of Iraq, and that's not how you make a little America. You have to have freedom of religion. You have to have separation of church and state, and they don't have that there. And so they had basically the same jihadi problem that they had been having before we even invaded Iraq. And we didn't do anything to stop that. And then we said, "Hey, we're gonna leave," and nothing bad can possibly happen now. So I feel like War of the Worlds is a pretty good description of what we're seeing in Iraq now.
Very good, very good. I choose Idiocracy because I see the complete gigantic behemoth of government. And it's constant failures, its inability to do the simple things. And the people that run it, and as individuals, I'm sure there are some fine human beings out there that get up and go to work and try to do their best. But I was once a union millwright pipe fitter in a factory. And I wanted to do a good job, but the union just wouldn't allow me to because the union said, "You work to the slowest person. Don't burn up that job, because if you make that job go too fast, then you can't have it, you know, then we can't have this time off." It's horrible what happens when the federal government is so big, is so unwieldy that that nothing gets done. And I saw that in Idiocracy, and I saw the people in Idiocracy trying to follow a script, a narrative, and not step outside their boxes and try to do something different. So yeah, I pick Idiocracy. So, all right, Dr. Steve, give me a title for our book.
I would have to say it's a good question. A title for the book, I would have to say, maybe Rome is Burning.
Rome is Burning. I like that.
I just put that as the way I feel looking at the news, looking at the Middle East. As we do nothing about it, I feel like the White House is completely incompetent and no one's doing anything correctly. I don't. When you look back at history and you see the fall of the Roman, how Rome fall. I was going to say Roman Republic, but it actually became more of a dictatorship. They just became incompetent to deal with their foreign and domestic policies. You had the Vandals, you had the Visigoths, and at home they had corruption running rampant throughout their own government, and you had people who were in it who were you know, a Caligula completely insane. And so I could see a Caligula put that to a Nancy Pelosi, and you see all these other places, like other people like the Visigoths, the Vandals, can equate them to all the crazy people we see over in the Middle East with the ISIS and all the other terrorist groups, and just combine it here and just say Rome is burning. That's why I feel like I'm living in right now.
Excellent. You know what? Having guests like you guys make this job so easy. Lilia, what
do you call it? Oh, dear. I do remember one of my favorite lines back in school when they actually, you know, taught us about the Constitution and the Founding Fathers, which was wonderful. I love the concept of no taxation without representation, that if you didn't have a voice, you didn't have to pay taxes. It wouldn't be just wonderful if they just shortened that to no taxation. If all these government programs, the bureaucrats, I mean, even the military, if they all just stop getting money automatically just because they went into our pockets to get it, if they actually had to earn it, or if we actually had to say, you know what, I am for this war, I want to support the men and women, I will give up some of my hard-earned money to get them the equipment and the training they need to do it. And, you know, if Obamacare needs any money, they're going to have to get it from someone else. If this program needs money, I'm not giving it to them. And wouldn't it just be wonderful if it worked that way? And how different would everything be? And what a wonderful story for a book, if you could have the the imagination to do that.
So we can run it like what's that thing they blackmail you into at work where you got to pick something to give money to? What's that? You guys
the
know what I'm talking about? United Way, you know. United Way, where they have all the different things you can choose from. They want you to give to something. They just give to something, okay? And that way you can be part of it, and our company can look good, and we can do all this. So it would be like that. You could have all these government programs, and you have to give a percentage of your salary so you can put it where you want it to go, like
yeah,
just like
absolutely.
United Way. Oh, that would be awesome. Robert.
I like that. Put your money where your mouth is. And the great thing about that is that, you know, you can vote as much as you want, and it's not illegal.
That's right.
But I would title my movie or book Atlas Trip, because I feel like America has been kind of holding up the global economy. America has been keeping a lot of, you know, the bad actors throughout the world kind of in fear, and basically been a stabilizing force for the entire planet. For decades and decades and decades, and that's what America's role in the world was, as a superpower. Now, everything that we worked for is crumbling. Nobody is afraid of America. Benghazi was a litmus test, not just for the American government and the ability for the American government to respond to attacks on Americans, on American soil and American interests. It was also to see how the American people would react. And for the most part, thanks to the, you know, the media that was willing to cover up for anything, nobody could admit that there was a problem in Benghazi. The entire Benghazi attack, for most people in America, was not really a big deal. They didn't care. They just thought it was four dead people, not four dead Americans, not a dead ambassador, and they just left it at that. Americans don't want to get into another war, and that's where
we
are.
Can you blame them? Can't blame them, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do. I would call it "Don't worry, be happy," because apparently that's what everybody's doing. Who all of our good friends who are the low information people who don't bother to study up on history, current events, and I think I blame them. To be honest with you, I blame them. I blame the people that educate our children improperly or falsely. I work with a couple kids in their 20s, and some of the things they tell me they learned in school, like how we, you know, I don't even know where to begin. Christopher Columbus Day. Columbus, the evil imperialist, you know, and how this land is not our land. It belonged to the American Indians, and we should never even be here. And I kind of had to stop and say, Kenny, do you know every single piece of land in this world was acquired one of three ways? It was either squatted on, it was fought for, or it was bought. That's pretty much the only way you get land. So, and everybody got their land that way. So to say that one person isn't entitled to this piece of land is to say that no people are entitled to any piece of land. So that really doesn't make a lot of sense, don't you think? And then I get the dog hearing the loud noise, you know, the head tilt. So, you know, and that's when I learned to shut up. All right. The last little thing in our spy thriller, we seem to have put together a good book here. I think we all have ideas. Do we need any romance in this book, Dr. Steve?
Well, I think a little romance will attract a wider audience. So I would have to say a little romance would not hurt. I would have, you know, being that I've been with my same wife for about 22 years, I really forget what romance is, so I'd probably be not the person to write about that too much.
I've been with my wife 20 years, and you know what's romantic? You know what she says the sexiest thing she's ever seen is a man with a vacuum cleaner. So you know, just put on a pair of boxer shorts, you know, silk ones, and vacuum the floor. And I'll tell you what, dude, it turns them on every time. Right,
or
Lilia?
Do the dishes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Lilia, a man with a vacuum cleaner, sexy? Yes or no?
Oh, yes, under the right conditions, because you do want a believable romance. You want a strong woman, not one who's there to sort of kind of chew her nails and get taken hostage just in time for the guy to rescue her. Like, if you're going to do that, no, don't bother. But if you have someone who's essential to the story, contributes, and believable, and it's someone that the reader can love, then we will believe that our main character can fall in love with her.
Very good. I like that. Yeah, like, have you been watching 24 by any chance?
Not lately, no.
Oh, the new 24 is pretty good. I think you'd enjoy that. I'm a Jack Bauer fan big time. Robert,
tell me of
the romance
in our
book.
Jack Bauer's still alive? I'm only in season two. You just ruined the entire next, like, five seasons.
No, I didn't. He's still alive.
Think,
of course he's still alive.
But every hour, he's like, his life is in danger. Damn.
Well, yeah. He's a super spy. Your life's
apparently
always in danger.
Okay, so romance. It has to be done right, because the whole purpose of romance is because you want to be invested more into your characters, and really you don't want to see either the man or the woman, or the man and the man, or whatever you're into, die. And that's why you don't want him to die, because you're like, but he just found true love. I don't want to see him get obliterated or die from the super virus, because he just met the woman of his life, or got back with his wife after, you know, they divorced, or whatever. There's so many scenarios that you can do with that. But that's why they put romance into action and thrillers, because it helps us be a little bit more invested in the safety of our main protagonist. But the problem with that is also, if you look at some movies that have done this, in some books, like World War Z, apparently Brad Pitt, the reason we think he was important and he loved his wife and he was a good husband, because he made pancakes. Did you guys see this? Because he was just making pancakes and like, oh, that makes him a good dad, and that makes him a good husband, because he's a stay-at-home dad who makes a lot of pancakes. And that's pretty much all he does, make pancakes. And that was basically why we're supposed to care about Brad Pitt. But guess what? I did not care about Brad Pitt. I didn't care about the zombies. I kind of cared about the state of Israel. That was pretty much it.
Hmm. Very good. All right, we have exactly 5 minutes left. So here's what I would like to do with our remaining time. I'm going to start with Dr. Steve. And Dr. Steve, I would like you to take time to tell us all about your novel, tell us where we can learn about it, tell us where we can buy it, give us website addresses, make us want to read Dr. Steve's book. Go.
Okay. Well, I'll be happy. I think you set up everything for my book, because what I do is I really base it on contemporary issues and actually things that I've seen throughout my life. So the backdrop of the novel will be disintegrating healthcare system, the rise of big government, the increased national debt to the point where I have a virus that's based upon something that I experienced back when I was in school that gets out. It's almost like a MERS-like virus, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome virus gets out, and we really have no way to stop it because our government is too broke. The world's governments are too broke to combat a pandemic. And our healthcare system really is crumbling. And I base that upon grant money for new research, new drugs, new technology. And I also base the story about events that occurred in the late 90s, early turn of the century when we had gene therapy. It was supposed to be the panacea cure-all. We'll put a good gene in the virus, give you the virus. The virus will put the good gene in, and you're cured from the disease. That was a big push back then. And that's what I got to know some of the researchers. And what happened, unfortunately, was the virus itself was supposed to be inactivated, yet the virus itself killed some of the people in the study, started killing some of the people in the study or getting them sick. Also, they injected the gene, but guess what? It was causing people cancer or leukemia-like side effects. So back then I said, well, what if we're doing this type of gene therapy? You said the virus was inactive. You said the virus won't cause any damage, and you're wrong on both cases. I said, what's the virus? They go, well, it's the adenovirus. I go, isn't that the common cold virus? See, what if that gets loose? So that was a theory upon which my novel was based,
awesome.
That one of
awesome.
These viruses gets out. And it's
where do
it's
we
not
find
too
it?
Far from
where do we
truth.
Find it?
You can get it at Barnes & Noble. It's on the web. Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble. You can access it through my website, martinoauthor.com. And also one other thing about the book I'd like to mention is I add some other my other interest in it, like there's a Bible code in it, and it's actually based upon real fact that's been proven by the government through mathematical journals about something that even Sir Isaac Newton tried to search for all of his life. I incorporate the Bible code and finding a way that the main character of the book and his, I do have a love interest in it, and the rest of this group travel the world, fight off someone who is, I try to make a fascist megalomaniac who wants to stop him at all costs. You have to try to find the cure without getting himself killed.
Dr. Steve, it sounds great. Don't give us too much, though. Let me get Lily in here real quick. We've got a minute and a half. Lily, Ordinance 93, tell us all about it.
That's right, Ordinance 93. So in the future, there's a new law that if you want to have a baby, you need to get permission, and it follows the first four people to break this law. And it's kind of sad because I do see this as a definite possibility in our society. You know, what if, the government gets too big, they feel a responsibility to take care of everybody, so they would pass this law so that only the people that they choose can actually reproduce. And I think another interesting twist on the book is that the first four people to break this law are one man and three women. And, of course, as they're running, they're not only running to escape but to protect the mother, who everyone wants to know who that is, but, of course, we won't find that out until the end. And you could actually get the first chapter absolutely free at lfabry.com.
Excellent. Hey, I read it, and it sets up good for another book. Are you busy with that?
Possibly.
All right. Well, I won't give too much away. Now, you can see me and Robert. You can hear me and Robert, not see us, but hear us, on the Robert Bertrand
Dead Wrong Radio.
Dead Wrong Radio, at Saturdays at 8 o'clock. So I want to thank Daria Giovanni for letting me host her show. We have 5 seconds left. God bless everyone. God bless America. And we are out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Night.
Bye.